And this is the Age Group Multisport Podcast with me, Richard Conway. This is a platform for age group multisport athletes to showcase their journeys. Welcome along to AMP, and thank you ever so much for taking your time out to give us a listen. Much appreciated. Hope you're all well, and if you're still training, I hope it's going okay and you're able to get out and run and bike. And I know some people are doing a bit of cold water swimming as well, so good luck with that. Time of year that we start to have a little bit of a break from all things multi-sport, with Christmas coming up and parties and festivities and pretty much family gatherings and just catching up and enjoying ourselves. So yeah, I think multi-sport in general, swimming, bike, running, takes a little bit of a back burner, and quite rightly so. So I hope you have a great break and have a great Christmas, and Santa brings you everything that you want. This will be the last pod until the new year, when we'll get back onto it. So hope you enjoy it. It's a good one. This episode we speak to Andy Newham, and Andy's pretty local to me actually. On the morning of the recording, didn't realise that he was actually in the town where I lived working. So we could have actually done this face to face, but however, we didn't realise till we actually got on the Zoom call later on in the afternoon that he'd just been up the road. Bit of a shame, but it's still a great chat. He's a fascinating character, is Andy. He started off not doing anything well into his 30s, apart from, as he says, drinking, smoking and gaming. But since then, he's really got into it. And yeah, he does everything and anything he can. Pretty much long distance, short distance, triathlon, duathlons, and also TTs. He's well into his TTs. And he makes me laugh because he talks about his tricycle that he's got, and he races and been chasing records up and down the country. So we've got lots to get into with Andy. It was a real pleasure, and I hope you enjoy it because he is such a character. So that's coming up. You've probably seen over the last month that the age group news on social media, Instagram and Facebook, were doing their annual awards again, and it was all open to people to have their vote on who they thought the shortlist athletes, male and female, should win the award. And the five male athletes were Donald Brooks, Matt Barnes, Steve Derrett, Craig Dice and Will Atkinson. And in the ladies, it was Linda Russell-Bond, Marianne Carpenter, Megan Chappell, Phoebe Barker and Holly Andrews. And Donald Brooks won yet again, and Linda Russell won for the ladies. So well done, guys. Much deserved. Well done to everybody who made the shortlist. The Age Group News guys also decided to choose this year a Lifetime Achievement Award. And the award was for an athlete who is sadly no longer with us, but who made a lifetime contribution to our community. And this year's award went to Peter Norman, who won the 85-89 Age Group World Duathlon Championships in April before he passed away in July. And I remember being at Darley Moor duathlon in at the beginning of the year, and just warming up by the wall of tyres on the racetrack, and was doing a bit of stretching and leg swings, and I didn't know it was Peter at the time, but we got into a discussion. I noticed that he was wearing some Alpha Flies, and we got into a discussion about how good the shoes were, and it was so great for me to see somebody of Peter's age wearing a pair of Alpha Flies, and that's how seriously he took his racing, and he'll be sadly missed. So well done to Peter for getting this award. It was nice to see that the World Triathlon have announced the next 5 years multi-sport venues, which consisted of Australia next year, and then Abu Dhabi, Spain and Canada. So it was good to get those penciled in on the calendar. We're doing AMP Next Gen again. I've already got one young man interested, and I am looking for more guests. So if you're into triathlon and you're looking now to qualify and do some qualifying races for 2024 to qualify for 2025, and you've never qualified before, we're trying to do an audio diary like we did last year, and follow a few athletes to see if they can manage to represent the country. So if you're interested in that, get in touch. There was a podcast I was listening to, and they were talking about winter testing. I believe it was Oxygen Addict. Do you winter test? I've just done a week where I've done an FTP test, and I've also done a 5K time trial test. As at the moment, I'm not swimming because I've lost my swimming mojo. I haven't done a CSS test, but no doubt in the new year, when I feel like getting back in the pool, that'll happen. So what about you guys? Do you test frequently? They recommended that it should be every 6 weeks or so. So it'll be interesting to hear your thoughts and what you test and how you use the data that you receive from your testing. And for the running 5K time trial, it resets your heart rate zone, so you know whether you're in the right zone and what your heart rate should be. So yeah, I think it's a pretty good thing to do. It's not a nice thing to do. It's very, very painful, isn't it? But yeah, I think it's a good thing to do on a regular basis. And as in our local leisure centre, and they've just upgraded the BodyTrax machine. They did have the original one that came out, and now we've got the BodyTrax 2.0. And what a piece of kit that is. Basically, it sends a current through your body, and it works out the impedance from all the different things going on inside your body. So it'll look at your visceral fat, it'll look at your fat mass, bones, water, muscle. Yes, and the information you get from it is quite incredible, actually. So if you haven't had that experience, that's another bit of kit that's well worth exploring. Because it's not all about weight. It's actually more about how your body is made up of all the different components. As I've said, water, muscle, fat, bone, tells you your visceral fat, your metabolic age, your BMR, your BMI. It's got things on here such as a leg muscle score. BodyTrax itself gives you a score and a physique score. So yeah, all that interesting data. So, and another thing that you can keep track on to see how your health is, rather than just your weight. Couple of podcast recommendations. Episode number 167 of the Doctors of Running podcast had a questions answered podcast session with Dr. Victoria Seckley. They were discussing how the best way to integrate strength training session to your training, and how you get started lifting heavy. And it was good. Yeah, enjoyed it. Learned a bit. So put a few things into my own strength training sessions. So yeah, good. Recommend that one. And the second one was Triathlon Mockery with usually Joe and Tom. However, Tom was away in Mexico racing, so they had Max Stapley, the GB triathlete, on as a guest, fresh out of his win at Phuket over in Thailand, which was nice to see him get a win. So Max was talking about his win, and Joe was talking about taking part in an event called the High Rocks event, which is a complete change from triathlon and multi-sport. It's a CrossFit event, and from what I can gather, he did quite well and he really enjoyed it. So that was a good listen. Speaking of Max Stapley, I think he did quite well at the Bahrain 70.3 at the weekend. I think he was in the top three. And congratulations to Cat Matthews for absolutely smashing the ladies' race. Coming out on top. Nice to see her finishing a season really, really well after a disappointment at Kona earlier on in the year. It was a pity that it wasn't on the TV or on the internet or anything, which surprised me, actually, being over there in Bahrain where money seems to be no object, but there you go. Right, now it's time for the main event. I hope you enjoy this one. Andy Newham, a right character, really enjoyed it myself, so I hope you do too. And we'll see you on the other side. Thank you ever so much for getting in touch and agreeing to come on and share your story. Much appreciated. If you just want to start off by introducing yourself, where you come from, what you did growing up as a kid, sporting wise, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. No problem at all. So I'm Andy Newham. I'm an age group athlete in the 50 to 54 massively stacked category. That ages that seems to age up with you. So you'll know from 10 years ago, you probably looked at the results of what the 50 to 54 were doing and thinking, when I get to 50 to 54, yeah, I stand a really good chance if I manage my decline. But you get to 50, 54 and it's just rammed with people that are just insanely talented in the pool, in the open water, on bikes, and can run and can do all of it. And it's just, and now you look at the next age group up and they're even better. And then you're starting to look at, well, if I could hold this until I'm 70, could I, you know, could I be a world champion? It's a little bit like that. But going right the way back to being a kid, favorite lesson in school was games. And I couldn't wait for it. But I didn't actually have the talent to make school teams. I was passionate about football. And if I think back, I probably could run. I rode a bike quite a lot. Our cross countries, the longer they went, the better I suppose I was. But also as a child, it was quite, home life wasn't entirely happy. So I was one of those kids that ate a lot. Some people do, just emotional eaters that eat to be happy. I was one of those people. And so consequently, I was a big kid. And I suppose with that comes a shying away from doing anything that's exercise related. And I think what I saw was over my teenage years, I regressed into the bedroom where I would spend most of my time on, the old Amstrad CPC 464 machine. And then when I left home and I got a job, then I found the pub, the smoking and the drinking and the lack of exercise and the addiction to, I suppose, to gaming and not really wanting to do anything active meant that I got into my early 30s and I was touching 21 stone.
Wow.
So it was a huge, almost double what I am today. And it was just a case of, I thought my life was great. I honestly thought that, I don't need to do anything at all. You know, I'm surrounded by people that have exactly the same culture. We all like going to the football. We all like going to the pub. We're a little bit overweight. So what? And I suppose for me, as I got towards the mid 30s, I kind of looked at my dad, and I'd always wanted to be my dad. And I suppose maybe that's where the pub culture came from. He lived his life. He was a good old boy from the pub. And I looked at my dad in his mid 50s, and I was approaching my mid 30s. And I thought, I can't go on. I can't continue down this path, because there is a point where you can't reverse it. Mm. And I think I recognized that in my dad when he was in his mid 50s, that there was no coming back. So at that point, I started looking for something that was, you know, a little bit more active, started playing badminton, started trying to lose weight. And then eventually, towards the end of 2008, I went to the smoking cessation clinic and managed, after trying quite a few times, but actually managed to stop. With that then became, the weight started to creep a little bit. And I got to 2009, and in a new year, new me moment, decided that what I was going to do is I was going to train for Lincoln 10K in the March of that year. So I dedicated myself to starting to move away from going out so much to the pub, and starting to replace some of the evenings in and some of the pub nights, started to go out running. And I did enjoy it, and I enjoyed it, but then I wanted to do something else, because I was just running and running and running and running, and it can become a little bit monotonous. And I have got an attention span of a goldfish. So I do tend to get attracted by the next shiny thing. So yeah.
That's typical triathlete though, isn't it, really? Yes. we're like magpies to the new thing that's coming out. Just while we're on a pause there, just going back to, you know, your dad, and that's quite fascinating. Did your dad have any health problems that were flagged up to make you think about things a bit more in depth?
Not really, but he was one of these people that obviously he'd smoked all of his life, and you'd go and you'd stay over, and in the morning he'd have this coughing fit which would just go on and on. He wasn't really a big chap. His coughing was just something that, I was concerned about. And he unfortunately passed a couple of years ago. I look back and think, well, now I'm 51. Dad only made it to 70. If I'd have continued, perhaps I would have been in the last 20 years of my life.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased I made the change when I did. I don't feel anything less about my dad or the way that he lived his life. He had fun and he built an incredible friend base, but I don't know. I think I want a long life.
It's right, isn't it? You want a long life, but there's no point in having a long life if you haven't got the quality. You know, you need that quality, and you can't have that quality of life later on in years when you've been smoking and you've been drinking and you've not looked after yourself, because eventually it all catches up with you, doesn't it? And
it does.
You know, and then who wants to be stuck? You know, you might live till 70, 80, 90, but who wants to be stuck at that age if you can't do anything? It's just pointless, isn't it? I think the problem is that we don't realise, a lot of us, until it's too late. And it's all about educating yourself and like you've done, changing your ways and then finding like-minded people of a different ilk. So I find it fascinating. I do a lot of listening to podcasts around lifestyle and health and fitness and well-being and longevity, and I just find it, the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know anything.
Well, every day is a school day, isn't it? I think we're all still learning things. I try and take in as much as I can, and if something's new, then I'll perhaps try it and see whether or not it's fit for me.
Yeah, that's probably the best way, isn't it, really?
Which is probably how I fell into triathlon. Yeah. So I started 2009, and I was going to do a 10K every month. By about April time of that year, the running was getting to be a little bit monotonous. And I just happened upon a blog by a chap from Mansfield Tri Club. And he was a large chap as well. He was a 20 stone, as I remember. But he could do triathlon. And up until that point, I thought that triathletes were... So if you've seen Rocky IV and Dolph Lundgren, and that training montage scene where he's in the gym, that's what I thought your average triathlete was, that they were these superhumans, and actually they're human. And it was his blog that opened my eyes to that. And I thought, well, hold on. So I'm spending my time doing one discipline and just running. And I could be doing so much more. I could be getting in the park. I could be doing some swimming. At that point, I had my 10-meter badge from when I was 12 years old. So I knew I could swim. I just didn't know if I could swim longer than a length. And of course, you can get back on your bike, which is something that I hadn't done for 15 years up from that point. So I went along to Woodall Spa Triathlon, which is I call that the home of triathlon, basically because it was the first one that I went to, just to have a look at what was happening there. And it was basically all types of people, all types of equipment. And I thought, I'm going to give this a go. So I joined Lincoln Tri Club, which I'm still a member of today, and set about trying to learn how to swim, which was a tough job. Nowadays, I try and avoid swimming where I can, because I'm more of a duathlete, as we'll come on to. But back then, yeah, I couldn't wait. And I was with Lincoln Tri Club, and I think we were from the May, and I had my first event in August, which was the Express Triathlon up in Leeds, as it was. And I think that doesn't run anymore. I got a bike from Halfords on the Bike to Work scheme. It was a Carrera TDF yellow and black version, which was a medium. So it was far too small for me, but I didn't care. It was a racing bike. It had those toe clips on. So I used toe clips on the pedals. So I still remember that first triathlon like it was yesterday, and it's 15 seasons ago now. And I remember that they'd cut the grass the day before to the transition, but my start time was 7:44 in the morning. It was covered in dew, so you came out of the pool across the car park, and then by the time you got to your bike, you were covered in wet grass, but cut grass, like the cuts of the grass. The bike course was lumpy, and I remember having to get off my bike and push it up two of the hills. And you probably, if I look back now, the hills probably weren't any worse than a flyover, but they were too much for me at that time. And the run was just basically a walk. And of the 300 and odd people that were there that day, finished in the bottom five. So I'm right on the last page of the results at the bottom. Yeah. There was me. But I didn't care. The monthly 10Ks in 2009 became a triathlon every 3 weeks. And what I tasked myself was to continue working on the training and being better on the bike and the rest of it. But I was trying to move myself up the results. So for the next one, I'd set myself, right, so I don't want to be bottom five, but can I be better than bottom 10? Or the Holy Grail, can I get off the bottom sheet of the results? Because the results were sheets back then. And I just found that the more I did it, the better I got at it. And the more I enjoyed the training as well.
It's one of those, isn't it? You don't necessarily, it doesn't get easier. You just get a bit faster, and then a bit faster, and a bit faster. And then you can train a little bit faster. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's, you're being a bit competitive. And you think, like what you've just said, where you've come from, that bottom five, you know, and what you've achieved. It's just sheer perseverance and consistency and bloody mindedness and not giving up, and the hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of training that goes into it, and dedication. You know, it's, some professionals wouldn't even put that much time in.
We do put an awful lot of time in. It's quite a selfish sport in a way, because of the amount of time that we have to dedicate to it. So we have to be mindful about those around us as well, because they also give up quite a lot. I'm very lucky. My wife Heidi is 100% supportive, but she will tell me if I've gone off the end of the Richter scale in terms of what I've committed to.
Yeah. Does she participate as well?
No, completely the opposite. So I get this quite a lot. So Heidi's Belgian, so people expect that she
great
comes
cyclist.
From a cycling background. Yes, but absolutely not. Yeah. It is worth saying that Heidi has completed one triathlon that she did with me, one at Stratford-upon-Avon, but I think it was a one and done. I made sure that my first venture into Ironman was a 70.3 in Antwerp. So this was back in 2010. So we were able to go over, stay with Heidi's family, and then do the event. We had the family there on the day, and I had plenty of, you know, lots of support and got round.
Yeah.
But like anything, it creeps, doesn't it? And so you've gone to half distance, right? So can you go to full distance? So I spent probably the next 3-4 years going from half distance to my first full, which was Austria, and then a half and a full the year after, Wimbledon for the half and Bolton for the full. And then, oh, let's do something that's hard. So we went, we did Lanzarote in 2013. Okay, so can we do Outlaw 5-6 weeks later? So we do two crammed together. Then I got into time trialing. So during that time, I joined Lincoln Wheelers, where I still am now. Lincoln Wheelers, known for being a time trialing club.
Mm.
So got heavily into time trials. So on top of the Ironmans, then we've got time trialing. So we start at 10 miles. Oh, we'll creep that. We can do 25, 50, hundreds. And then 12 hours, and then Heidi sat in a car for 12 hours in Yorkshire, waiting for me to come round every 2 hours. And then at that point, yeah, we're at saturation. It's too much. Yeah. So we've got to dial back. What didn't I enjoy doing? Swimming. What did I enjoy doing? Time trialing. So that's how we got into the age group stuff.
Yeah, so, I was going to ask you about that. Obviously, there'd have been, you'd have probably found out about age group from being in Lincolnshire Tri, did you? Because I guess there's a few guys and girls in there that have represented GB.
Very much so. There's a rich history of club members that have gone on and represented Great Britain for age group. So there was plenty of people to tap into. Mm. And then it was just a case of trying to find which is going to be my best distance, and how am I going to qualify for that? And I think we've all done that. So for me, something with a longer bike that's maybe that little bit flatter.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite strategic, as you've sort of outlined there. You need to play to your strengths to be able to have any chance in qualification, I think. I think people who are new to it probably don't realise how tactical it can be. Not for every age group, you know, but especially for the really, really flooded with, like you mentioned earlier, flooded with very, very good athletes in certain ages, you definitely need to be quite canny about what races you take on. And
I think, yeah, I'm not a climber on the bike, so I tend to try and avoid races where it's gnarly like that, because I lose too much time going up that I don't then tend to get on the down. So managed to get a qualification for Horst middle distance duathlon in 2015, which suited me down to the ground, because
yeah.
10K, 60K, 10K. And I knew that being in the Netherlands, Horst is going to be pancake flat. Absolutely flat. And it's going to be windy because it's going to be open and exposed. But I'm from Lincolnshire. We do fens and we do open windy time trials So it's second nature.
Middle distance, you didn't have to do any qualification races or anything. You just had to do a time and put your time in. Is that right?
I think I used my my time against stage group winner in Outlaw from the previous season. So I think I was just within that 120%. During 2014, I'd been doing quite a few sprint duathlons as well, just to get used to the format. And I'd got close to qualifying for sprint duathlon, but it just never rolled down far enough for me.
I mean, like you said, there's some fast people in there doing ridiculous runs and time splits. So just going back to first triathlon, you carried on with Lynx Tri. So when did it start? When did you start going? Because we talked about your middle distance and long distance and the aspect from a family point of view. What sort of time period was that over that you'd gone from your first try to longer distance and full?
So between 2009 and 2014, basically I'd gone from nothing to completely pushing the boundaries. And I think I finished 2014. It was Ironman Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my fifth full distance.
Right.
And I'd had a bad experience in the water in 2014 in Wales, because it was a just swelly as you like. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people didn't, you know, they didn't make it through the swim. But at that point, that was enough was enough, because I'd only entered Wales on a whim. I wasn't probably fit enough, because I had a run injury that I was only really back to 10 miles of running at the time. And I'd only entered it because somebody had said, oh, well, Wales is harder than Lanzarote. Well, I've done Lanzarote. Well, I can't really not do this one. So you're just ticking things off a list.
Mm.
And I've seen people where that spirals further than that, and they start to do the craziest stuff that I never could do. They'll do an Ironman a day for 10 days or something, you know, like that. And, you know, all credit to you if you can do that, but it would break me.
Yeah. And where does it stop? That's the, you know, it's...
Well, no, it doesn't. And of course, to train for all of that, you know, you have to realize it's not just you. Obviously, you've got the ones that you love and you care about, and you've got to earn your pennies as well.
True.
So
yeah.
you've got to make yeah. sure that yeah. you're not what would be the point of turning into work in the morning just completely wiped out every day, because I was having to do ridiculous amounts of miles so many times a week and all the rest of it. So dialed it back a little bit, concentrated on club time trialing, but also going and doing these duathlons. And my balance is always better when life is like that.
Hmm.
It's just doing small local stuff and then the duathlons. And life's perfect.
Yeah. And from a personal point of view and a health point of view, obviously over this period of time, you're getting fitter and fitter and thinner, you know. How did that reflect on your mental attitude?
Tremendously so. It's whether it's just that I've got permanent endorphins swimming around, or I exercise that much that I'm never out of an exercise high or something. It helps with confidence. It helps with so I was always somebody that had some kind of niggle, always some kind of health niggle, never quite right, never not having a cold, or getting over one cold and going into another cold, or you know, those kind of bad backs. I had an awful time before I lost weight, awful time with bad backs. I don't have any of that now. Apart from falling off my bike, I haven't had a sick day in 15 years. Before then, you know, my sickness record with my, because I've had the same employer for 29 years, patchy at best. But since 2009, I did fall off my bike and I did have a bad concussion. And that put me out of commission for a couple of weeks. But I don't get, I very rarely get colds. I very rarely am ill, if at all. And I put that down to just continual, continually training and doing something. It's nice to have that, some focus.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said for it, isn't there? You know, it can go the other way, I suppose. If you get too fit, I mean, you see all these athletes that are so fit that they pick up bugs and colds and so quickly. I think it's like you've just said, it's quite a balance, isn't it? And getting it just right.
I get some people that say, oh, you run your immune system down so much that I would expect that you would be ill more. And then you get other people that think, oh, it's just going to bounce off you. Yeah, your body's a temple, mate. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just...
I think a lot of it is down to recovery as well and how much you actually look after yourself and obviously what you're putting in your body, but also how much you allow yourself to recover and rest, you know, and good sleep and all of those pillars that people go on about. I think, you know, sleep's massively important. So if you're getting a really good night's sleep, seven continuously and consistently, I think that's a massive part of not being ill and not picking up bugs and your body being able to deal with it. So that's, you know, one of the things that I truly believe in. But it's a fine line, I guess.
I say very reluctantly, like never say never, but I am aware I've turned 51 last week, so I'm in what's called Sniper Alley, which is your 50s. And I'm told if anything is going to get you, it's going to get you in your 50s. And if you can navigate your way to, by hook or by crook through your 50s, generally anything nasty that's coming for you, you will already have seen signs of it in your 50s. So, yeah, I didn't know this, but Sniper Alley.
I've not heard that before. I've not heard that. I like it. I just believe that, like you've just said about, you know, Sniper Alley in your 50s, I think it's our responsibility to take control of our own well-being, and that, you know, and that's including going to the doctors. And I'm trying to get one of my teammates, he's in the 65 to 69 age group, I'm trying to get him to go to the doctors and get checked out, because he never has. Just for peace of mind, for my peace of mind more than his, to be honest. But you know what I mean? I just think it's part of our responsibility to look after ourselves and find out what's going on internally.
By the time that you realise that something's probably not quite right, you know, chances are it's, you know, you're quite a way down the line.
You'd got to that point where you realise you'd hit all your targets. Wales was your last foray into Ironman, was it? Or have you done any since?
This year I've caned it and done three. so I've learned, haven't I? I'm like one of these do as I say, not do as I do. But horse was fantastic. I've really learned a lot. I learned that you don't get anywhere by being 6 minutes slower on your second 10K than your first 10K. And also that you can't go out guns blazing on the bike and grind yourself into a hole, which is also what I did. So I came 30th or 31st in age group. Again, right. I'm towards the bottom of those results, but I've never really been bothered about coming last. I've always thought that I think you've got to try and then you've got to learn. So think about what went well.
Yeah.
And then think about, okay, what are the things that I could do which I could focus on and they'd be the biggest bang for your buck? I'm regular on the TriTalk forum, so I'd take information from the TriTalk forum and I'd lean on people from the cycling club. I'd lean on people for information from the tri club. But first and foremost, I think I needed coaching. And that was the two things happened that year. One, I bought a power meter for the bike.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that I started to get coached by Ruth Isles, who's been my cycle coach since 2016. And what I've got for the for the first time, I understand why I'm doing something. I understand how I was training and how I was racing, how we can work smarter, both in the training and how we manage races as well. And 2016 onwards, that's been an absolute game changer. For the course of that time, so 2016 to 2018, I was pretty much a pure time trialist.
Right.
I would just do county events. I'd do some nationals as well. So the national 10 and the national 25. And I also took up tricycling, which...
Right.
Yes, which people... And I bought myself a bright pink tricycle. And this thing is it's a thing of beauty. I've still got it and I still race it. But it's a 1950s Higgins tricycle. It's quite niche. Because I think to ride a tricycle, you need to have you need to be able to engage the reverse side of your brain. And I think how I've managed to do it and keep balance and take to it, where most people get on a tricycle, ride it 5 meters and fall off it because it's so difficult to ride, is that I'm one of these people that writes right-handed but plays golf left-handed. And bats left-handed, and I've got I'm wired up wrong, maybe. And people that know me probably say, yeah, you're right, yeah, you are wired up wrong. I'm wired up wrong in that respect. The way that you have to ride a tricycle being different to the way that you ride a standard bicycle. And that's why not many people can do it. But time trialing on a tricycle, on a dual carriageway, is the biggest thrill that you can have. It's absolutely bonkers, but it's brilliant.
I've never heard of it.
But it's brilliant.
Obviously, I've heard of a tricycle, but I've never heard of like anybody racing them and time trialing them. That's new to me. Like you said earlier, every day's a school day.
So I surrounded myself with nutters. Lincoln Wheelers is a tricycling club as well. It seems to be... It's a niche sport, and there's a clump of Tricycle Association members within the club. But I'm in a team with two lads, Ian Pike and David Mason. And we just spent that time just going up and down the country, chasing records, tricycle records, team records, solo records. And we just had a blast doing it. That goldfish thing came back again. Do I want to go back and do some long distance triathlons? Because it's been 5 years. So 2019, went out to Barcelona to do number six. Had a cracking time there because it is a pure... If there's an Ironman that is more akin to a time trialist, and plays up to those skills, Barcelona's is that the track there is just a gift. It really is. I spent most of my time just overtaking packs and berating people for cheating and all the rest of it. I suppose the downside of it is that I've got a sub-5 bike time there, but anybody that I say, oh, I've got a sub-5 in Barcelona, their immediate thing is, yeah, you drafted there, mate, didn't you? No, genuinely, I didn't. I lost more time berating packs of people, but it is what it is. It was supposed to be a short stint trying to do things in cycles. But 2020 and 2021, obviously COVID hit. Time trialing still went on from the July. In 21, went back to do Outlaw and Outlaw Half at Nottingham. And my times were good enough to submit again to get back into doing age group for GB.
Yeah.
Which meant that 2022 was back to that time trying and back to doing middle distance duathlon. And as luck would have it, Horst didn't host it, but Alsdorf did in Germany, and the bike course for the middle distance European duathlon champs is again, it's a time trialist dream. It's absolutely, absolutely fantastic. By this time, I'd picked up a running coach who's been helping me kind of unlock that inner Gabri Selassie in me. But in reality, I'm a 51-year-old bloke that suffers from calf injuries and all the rest of it. And I would be lying if I didn't say that I wasn't quicker and I wasn't getting and I wasn't getting quicker, but I haven't magically turned into one of those front of pack runners. You know, when you hear some stories, they're like, oh, I used to do an hour for a 10K, and then I got a bit of coaching and now I'm down to 35 minutes. Yeah, that's not me. I'm still in the 40s, but I can ride a relatively fresh time trial after that first run. Maybe that's an ability to be able to do that. And then my second run, I'm able to get off the bike and maintain pretty much the same average pace that I was doing in the first run. So I've closed that gap. So when I talked about Horst and there was 6 minutes between my first and second 10K, nowadays it's 45 seconds. So we're closing that gap.
Yeah, I mean, that's brilliant, isn't it? You've got to realise and recognise your limitations of where your brain would like you to be, but physically, you know, you're still improving. And I think as we're getting older, the key is not necessarily to get faster, but it's not to get slower.
Manage decline.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, manage decline. Yeah, that's a nicer way of putting it.
it's. I look at it and think, well, if I am looking at that 60, that 55 to 59 age group, and then ultimately 60 to 64 age group, how can I manage my decline better than the people in my age group now? And you just try. Yes, you try and improve, but it's more important not to get slower year on year. If you can just stay where you are.
Yeah.
Or even just slightly slower, you know, it's that rate of decline. And don't take a year out or don't take 2 years out, because I think that would just scuttle me.
Well, you know, when you're injured, I mean, I've just come off the back of an Achilles injury and I've been out most of the season, and I'm running again now, but it's still painful. When you've been out for so long, it's so, as you're getting older, it's so hard to get back to where you were. And I guess with an injury like the Achilles, you're just thankful that you're running at all, to be honest. But yeah, it's just hard, isn't it?
I remember listening to the chap that had both his hips replaced.
Yeah.
That was a guest previously.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, that's amazing. I don't know if I'd ever be able to come back from that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible what some people have actually done and come back from. To have it replaced and then get back to that level of racing again is quite a feat in itself, I think.
I've said to anybody that will listen is, if I do need to have something replaced, I want a carbon version.
yeah, that'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, so just going back to Alsdorf, where we had a much better outcome there just by pacing things a little bit more sensibly. So where I'd stomped myself into a hole in my previous outing at Alsdorf, I rode to power. And your power is your power. You can't magic cut watts on a race day. And I think what I used to do was think, oh well, I'll go to horse, and yeah, I can manage to, you know, I can manage to pluck a figure out of the air, say 280 watts over a course. Oh yeah, but it's extra special. I'll be able to eke out 300 watts. No, you won't. Your watts are your watts. You know, it's that's your number is your number. You just have to learn how to spread that number out over that course. You need to understand where you need to push a little bit more, and you need to understand where you're able to back off a little bit. And that's how a ride can be between 0 and 5 minutes different, just by where you spread the watts over a course. So, and that takes, you know, that takes a little bit of preparation, just to know on a course where you need to push.
Yeah, I mean, it's detrimental to your run anyway, isn't it? If you're pushing on the bike, your run's going to suffer for it, isn't it, at the end of the day? So you, like you said, you're better having an even power, knowing where you need to be.
And having a watts cap as well. So knowing not going to burn your matches, because you've gone up a climb and you've gone giddy, but you've gone giddy early. And you've got into a micro race with somebody. Time trialing was very important to that, because you very quickly learned that you're better off doing 20 watts more into a headwind and 20 watts less out of a headwind, and that makes a heck of a difference. So you just need to apply that logic to whichever course that you're going to be riding on. So Alsdorf, lot better. 31st first time out, 8th in Alsdorf, and second GB. We're not troubling the engravers in 8th place, but it was a better result than I expected, and it was a pre-qualification to go back next year. Job done. So going back next year, and hopefully another 2 years of wisdom, and I've gone a little bit of a way to learn the course as well. From the previous outing, and then probably the best event that I've ever done came in September of last year. I went to Zofingen to do the long distance duathlon champs, and that was just amazingly difficult, just so difficult. You know how I said earlier, oh, I prefer those flat courses, dual carriageways. Give me a tricycle. Give me a time trial bike. Now, give me some alpine climbs and all the rest. They're not alpine climbs, but they're bonkers. They're bonkers. Zofingen is a beast, but it's such a great event. It's such a great event, and I've still got so much learning and growing up to do with that course. But again, great result, came 7th.
Yeah,
not
well done.
Not going to trouble the engravers, but that's what's driving me into the winter. Could I have gone a bit harder on the bike? Did I respect the bike too much? Could I have eked things out on that first run? Could I have gone a little bit harder at the start of the second run? You know, did I play it too safe? Is there something on the bike that I can, you know, that I can change? Could I have the integrated bottle on the bike rather than leaning down? What would that save me? So all of these things that I'm kind of thinking about now is how I can improve that result, and that experience. You know, can I move up? But of course, it's not just me thinking that, is it?
It's not. No, and it's an art and a science, isn't it? You know, marginal gains, Dave Brailsford famously stated, didn't he? All these different things. Well, I guess the biggest thing is, looking at it, is how far off from your competitors are you to the engraving stage, shall we say? You know what I mean? And that's the realistic terms, isn't it? From 8th to podium. You know, what's that? Is it doable? That's the chunk of time and where could you, like you've said, where could you take that time back?
I think so. I think so. And I think I bought a bike, especially for Zofingen, because on my time trial bike, I've got a single, I had at the time a single ring 62 set up just for time trialing. And I didn't want to mess with that.
Yeah.
So I bought a bike and the bike was a bit alien. And if I'd have maybe ridden the bike that I train on all winter on the turbo and then race on in the summer, which fits like a glove, if I'd have ridden, you know, could I have been in a conversation? It only takes me to improve a little bit and for someone to fall back a little bit. You kind of, you're getting there. We're not outrageously out of the conversation, but there is a t-shirt that I've seen that I really like and it resonates with me. Train hard, get lucky. I do the long miles in the winter. I do all the solo riding. I'm in a club, but I'll go out and ride on my own in the miserable weather. Because in my mind, the people that I'm racing against maybe might not, but also I'm doing, for me it's like it's hard training. I've got all of that headwind. I'm not sharing it with anybody. It's grim, but I think it's benefiting me.
Yeah.
So we'll work very, very hard over winter, and hope to get lucky. And you know, if I don't. That's the year after.
Of course there is. Yeah, that's the beauty of it, isn't it? We do this. It's a lifestyle. And I say that probably nearly on every episode. This is a lifestyle. You know, we carry on and carry on regardless. You know, it's just what we do. So, yeah, I'm sure eventually, you know, maybe not next year, maybe, you know, whenever. But you've got the determination and, you know, you're educating yourself of how to get better. And I'm sure you're going to get there.
I think it's trying to listen to the coaches and taking on board their advice. They often will identify when maybe I've overdone it a little bit and I'm starting to get tired. One of the benefits of being coached and actually making sure that somebody is looking over your training sessions, but religiously outlining how you felt with each one. So I know that since 2016, Ruth sets the sessions for my bike, and then I will give honest feedback religiously every Sunday on every session and send a file to Ruth to review, and Ruth gives me feedback every Monday, and she will identify very quickly when I've got a little bit giddy and maybe have been doing too much, and that works, you know, that works a treat. And it's the same with my run coach as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a couple of good coaches there that'll rein you in, like you say, when you're doing too much. Have you looked at heart rate variability?
No, I haven't. They mention it quite a lot on the Oxygen Addict.
Yes. Yeah, he's a big fan of it.
I think it could be something that I start to look at over time.
You can get the app. I've got it on my phone and I do it religiously every morning. I think it's £10, or it was, and when I got it. And you've got it for life. That's all you pay. You can do a premium, but I haven't. And I finger on the back of the phone a minute and it tells me pretty much, gives me a score of what I need to be doing, resting wise. Am I training too much? Gives you different colours, blue, amber and red. And it's just, yeah, it's quite interesting, and it's just another guide.
It's on my radar, and I know that I'm going to go down that road eventually. When I get to it, I put things off, and I can put things off, like strength and conditioning for 14 years. But I've started to feed that in a little bit now, because as you get older, things get a little bit niggly.
This is so important. When I was speaking to Dean, who was on the last podcast, you know, that's something that he's in his 70s, and it's something that he's started not recently, but he's been doing for a while, that and a bit of Pilates and yoga, but strength training. It's, you know, it's even if we weren't doing what we were doing, strength, as you're getting older, you suffer from sarcopenia, muscle wastage, muscle loss. It is just so important to get into and get done and just become habitual. Again, it's another one of those things that you just indoctrinate into your lifestyle. It just becomes normal.
And I think you have to do it, don't you? You have to get into, once you're into the groove with something, And it becomes just natural, and like you say, it's just part of your daily routine, then it's embedded, and you can move on to, you know, you can move on to the next thing. So, for example, I mean, I said that, you know, I get the office to myself a couple of days a week because, you know, other people are working from home. I've got resistance bands with me, and I'll just walk up and down the office with my resistance bands on. I've got a balancing board with me as well. I can stand at the printer. I can do things like lunges and nobody's laughing, nobody's looking, but I'm getting them done.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's I mean, it all adds up, doesn't it?
It becomes second nature. And actually, you know when you've done it because it does feed into your results. You know, you feel stronger.
Yeah. And it also helps and curbs off injury, doesn't it?
It does. Oh, massively so. And I can always tell my calf is like a ready reckoner for when I know that I haven't been doing calf exercises, because calf exercises is the one piece of strength and conditioning that I had to do, because it's my calf is it's made of, I think it's made of glass. Oh, Andy, I'm going to break. Yeah. It's your calf speaking. I've looked at a run and I'm going to break.
But you're not the only one, because I reckon that's, you know, the most common injury. And it's definitely, I was listening to another podcast last week, and it's the most common injury for elderly people who are doing sports and running, the calf. So, you know, if you suffer with it now, then if you don't strength train, it's only going to get worse from what they've researched.
Like you said, you've got to look after yourself. Now we're in Sniper Alley, Rich. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Well, I was in Sniper Alley in my 40s because I had a heart attack at 46.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, yeah. So, but mine was genetic. You're lucky. You said you haven't got anybody who's suffered with heart issues and problems. Well, my family's riddled throughout, so it wasn't ever if, it was when, and it just come a bit early. But on the positive side, come out of it the other end and, you know, back to it, and I'm all the better for it, I think, because I'm aware I'm on right medication.
Is the Achilles sorted?
It's not sorted, because it takes a long time. It can take up to a year to get sorted, but it's getting better. And it's the thing with Achilles that I was listening to another podcast. It's called Doctors of Running. If you're interested, it's a really good podcast. And it's these doctors that generally they look at footwear and just assess them and see what they're like for runners. But this one doctor, he's doing a master's on Achilles injuries in elderly people. And he says the most important thing is not to stop doing anything with your Achilles. Keep it moving and get it the strength in it, build up and do heavy, repetitive strength sessions on it. So it's just a process going through. You know, I'm up to running. I ran 8K this morning on the treadmill. So, you know, by the end of it, I knew I'd done it. But again, now it's fine. And I've got to strap it up like a mummy to do it. But at least I'm back running and just building it slowly. So
and every time you'll just build that time that you can be on it.
Yeah.
And understanding what your threshold is, that's fantastic.
Well, thank you ever so much for sharing that. I think that brought us up to date, didn't it? You've got on next year.
I think, you know, next year is just concentrating on those duathlons. And I think what I'm going to do differently is this year, I did 3 Ironmans and finished the season with Langdale Marathon, which is just ridiculously hilly. It was too much. And over the course of the season, so I had this great result in Lanzarote, but then it was diminishing returns as the season went on. And I think what I'm going to do next year is build up slowly. So, you know, nothing more than 10K runs until I get to Alsdorf, and then go, maybe look to go a little bit longer in July, August, for that first weekend in September. For the event, I think just recognise that I'm getting older in these, you know, these advancing years, and I think just be steadier, take it more seriously, And just don't throw in crazy things, even though I've got Ian and Dave that are trying to get me to enter all sorts of events already. And I'm saying, no, I'm not doing an early season marathon. No, I'm not going to do a half Ironman. And it's just like, stick to the script.
Yeah.
I can sit here now and know what is going to be the best way forward. And that is to slowly build, but not be distracted by those shiny things again. That get us all. They will get us. I'll come off this. Come off speaking to you today, and tonight I'll buy some shiny shoes or something, which cost far too much, but won't add anything. Won't add anything to the overall package. It will just be. It's a shiny thing that other people have got. We have those failings, and sometimes we just don't. There's two competing voices. Nah, go on, just do it. And then you've got the other one going, no, just be sensible. And I'm going to listen to the voice that's sensible.
And I'm sure your coaches will be telling you, pick your A race. That's going to be it. Let's build towards that. If you want to get close to that engraving, you've got to pick your A race, work towards that just for one season. Doesn't have to be forever. And the main thing is you've got to enjoy what you're doing, because that's, we do so much of it. You've got to enjoy it, haven't you? That's the key to it. And it's got to be fun.
And that is the key. And I think I'll probably leave you with this thought. So I just started my winter training, and I went out on my bike for my first 4-hour ride in the wind and the cold, and I smiled all the way around. And when I got back, I thought, yeah, I'm all right. I'm in the right frame of mind. I can do another winter of hard training. And I think you're right. You have to enjoy it. And otherwise, it's just what you're doing it for. You spend so much of your time doing it. Why would you do something that makes you, that's hard or makes you miserable? So, no, the signs are good.
Talking of shiny things, we'll get to the quick fire questions. And the first one is, what's your favourite bit of kit?
That's easy. That is my Asioma power pedals, for sure.
Right.
They are indestructible. I've had the same set since 2016, never gone wrong. Probably, other than that, this sounds really sad. I've still got the same pair of bike shoes that I bought for my first triathlon. And they are Shimano TR31s with the one white with the one strap across, and they're that good that they've outlasted where I've bought shiny carbon shoes and the latest tech. And now I will buy, if I can find them, backup Shimano TR31s. So these will eventually, after 15 years, these will eventually crumble, but I know I'll have the same shoe to go into.
Yeah, I've got exactly the same triathlon shoes as you, and it's the only pair I've ever had, starting in 2010. So they are fantastic. I don't know whether you can get them anymore, but they are brilliant.
You can't get them. So I look for them secondhand on things like Vinted and eBay. And to date, I've got a couple of pairs ready to go, so for the rest of my life. But
so what price are they going for?
Oh, I'm picking them up for like 40 quid. For me, it's worth the investment. So they're not going to be the lightest shoe. And over time, I've been I've bought things like carbon plated shoes and lightweight shoes and all the rest of it, and never got on with them.
Yeah. I've done that for running, but I've never really bothered with biking, to be fair, or triathlon. I've done that for running. I've spent on running shoes, but they're just so comfy, and they're just easy to get on and off. They're just fab.
I think so. In running, my Nike Alpha Flies are the best shoes that I've ever had. Yeah. And they keep it. They take a licking and keep on ticking, those ones. I've got 600 miles out of a pair of Alpha Flies, and I think in the version that I'm on now, I did a 10K on Sunday, and then it flagged up on Strava afterwards that I've done 300 miles in them. Mm. Now, previously, my running shoes were dead after like 250 miles.
Yeah.
But these Alpha Flies are something else.
Well, I got a pair of Alpha Flies, the original ones, and they've just you know, the pointy bit at the back, that's just split. That's just come apart. So I've tried super gluing it. But in the meantime, I got a pair of the Adizero Pro 3s for a right bargain at the Yorkshire outlet. And they're really nice. Really enjoy that running in them. Really comfortable.
Mm. Tried different brands over the years. These Alpha Flies are the best things I've ever. They just fit me well and give me that little bit of extra bounce that we all need as we're getting on.
Yeah, again, it's the recovery as well that they allow you to have as well. Apparently, it's priceless, isn't it? When you're getting older, so.
They've been a godsend for my calves as well.
I can't think
I've had a calf niggle since I've had them.
Next question then. Any hints or tips for anybody wanting to get into triathlon or age group?
I would always say don't be afraid of trying something new and don't ever be afraid of coming last. Because
good point.
There's no shame in coming last in anything. I look back to a cyclocross is something that I love watching, but I'm hopeless at. But before I did it, obviously I was a decent time trialist. And I thought, yeah, that's going to be all right. It's going to be right up my street. I'm going to go and do cyclocross and I'm going to hammer it. Absolutely smash it. I'm going to be a cyclocross superstar. Turned up to a race at Ancaster and came last. Fell off 5 times on the parade lap. So, you know, I knew it was going to be a bad day, but I learned from it. I think you've got to just not be afraid. And in terms of GB age group, just play to your strengths, really.
Perfect answer. And finally, we've sort of touched on your shorter goals, but your short and your long-term goals.
I've got a Kona itch, but I realise that I really am going to have to bite the bullet on that and pick up some swim coaching. I want to be age group podium at Zofingen, really. I'm going to continue to go back to Zofingen every 2 years because it ties in, that weekend ties in with Heidi's family reunion in Belgium. So
perfect.
It's absolutely perfect. So Heidi, we go across together. Heidi goes to the family reunion bit. I go for my pilgrimage to Switzerland. I'd love to podium there. And you know, you never know. I might get lucky.
Well, good luck with it all. It's been a right joy to listen to your story. Really enjoyed it. Great just to chat about all things multisport in general and bikes and shoes and everything. So thank you for that. Much appreciated. And good luck with everything.
Thank you very much for having me on. Yeah, it's been a joy speaking to you today.
So there goes Andy, top fella, great conversation. We did go on a bit. I think that must be nearly the longest podcast that I've done. But don't really matter. We had a good time chatting. That's what it's all about. And you can follow Andy on X under Andy Newham. But he's also got his own blog, which is so detailed. It goes back to 2010. And finally, thank you once again for listening. If you'd like to come on the podcast and share your story like Andy has, get in touch. You can drop us an email at agegroupmultisportpodcast@gmail.com or get in touch through the gram at amp_1967 or our Facebook page is AmpGB. DM us on there and get yourself on and inspire others. Always looking for new guests. We're also on X at Age Group Multisport Podcast and our YouTube site channel, if you like, is up and running again. Now we've got the RSS feeds that go straight from our website page onto YouTube. It's so easy. So you can actually listen to all our podcasts on YouTube if that's your platform. So yeah. That's it. Thank you once again. And don't forget, stay safe, keep training, and love the process.